The development for which my friend had asked came in a quicker and an infinitely more tragic form than he could have imagined. I was still dressing in my bedroom next morning when there was a tap at the door, and Holmes entered, a telegram in his hand. He read it aloud. "Come instantly, 131 Pitt Street, Kensington, Lestrade." "What is it, then?" I asked. "Don't know. Maybe anything. But I suspect it is the sequel of the story of the statues. In that case, our friend the image breaker has begun operations in another quarter of London. There's coffee on the table, Watson, and I have a cab at the door." In half an hour we had reached Pitt Street, a quiet little backwater just beside one of the briskest currents of London life. Number 131 was one of a row, all flat-chested, respectable, and most unromantic dwellings. As we drove up, we found the railings in front of the house lined by a curious crowd. Holmes whistled. "By George, it's attempted murder, at the least. Nothing less will hold the London message boy. There's a deed of violence indicated in that fellow's round shoulders and outstretched neck. What's this, Watson? The top steps swilled down and the other one's dry? Footsteps enough, anyhow. Well, well, there's Lestrade at the front window, and we shall soon know all about it." The official received us with a very grave face and showed us into a sitting room, where an exceedingly unkempt and agitated elderly man, clad in a flannel dressing gown, was pacing up and down. He was introduced to us as the owner of the house, Mr. Horace Harker of the Central Press Syndicate. "It's the Napoleon bust business again," said Lestrade. "You seemed interested last night, Mr. Holmes, so I thought perhaps you would be glad to be present now that the affair has taken a very much graver turn." "What has it turned to, then?" "To murder. Mr. Harker, will you tell these gentlemen exactly what has occurred?" The man in the dressing gown turned upon us with a most melancholy face. "It's an extraordinary thing," said he, "that all my life I have been collecting other people's news, and now that a real piece of news has come my own way, I am so confused and bothered that I can't put two words together. If I had come in here as a journalist, I should have interviewed myself and had two columns in every evening paper. As it is, I am giving away valuable copy by telling my story over and over to a string of different people, and I can make no use of it myself. However, I've heard your name, Mr. Sherlock Holmes, and if you'll only explain this queer business, I shall be paid for my trouble in telling you the story." Holmes sat down and listened. "It all seems to centre round that bust of Napoleon which I bought for this very room about 4 months ago. I picked it up cheap from Harding Brothers, 2 doors from the High Street station. A great deal of my journalistic work is done at night, and I often write until the early morning. So it was today. I was sitting in my den, which is at the back of the top of the house, about 3 o'clock, when I was convinced that I heard some sounds downstairs. I listened, but they were not repeated, and I concluded that they came from outside. Then suddenly, about 5 minutes later, there came a most horrible yell, the most dreadful sound, Mr. Holmes, that ever I heard. It will ring in my ears as long as I live. I sat frozen with horror for a minute or two. Then I seized the poker and went downstairs. When I entered this room, I found the window wide open, and I at once observed that the bust was gone from the mantelpiece. Why any burglar should take such a thing passes my understanding, for it was only a plaster cast and of no real value whatever. You can see for yourself that anyone going out through that open window could reach the front doorsteps by taking a long stride. This was clearly what the burglar had done, so I went round and opened a door. Stepping out into the dark, I nearly fell over a dead man who was lying there. I ran back for a light, and there was the poor fellow, a great gash in his throat, and the whole place swimming in blood. He lay on his back, his knees drawn up, and his mouth horribly open. I shall see him in my dreams. I had just time to blow on my police whistle, and then I must have fainted, for I knew nothing more until I found the policeman standing over me in the hall.
"Well, who was the murdered man?" asked Holmes.
"There's nothing to show who he was," said Lestrade. "You shall see the body at the mortuary, but we have made nothing of it up to now. He's a tall man, sunburned, very powerful, not more than 30. He
He's poorly dressed and yet does not appear to be a laborer. A horn-handled clasp knife was lying in a pool of blood beside him. Whether it was the weapon which did the deed, or whether it belonged to the dead man, I don't know. There was no name on his clothing, and nothing in his pockets, save an apple, some string, a shilling map of London, and a photograph. Here it is. It was evidently taken by a snapshot from a small camera. It represented an alert, sharp-featured simian man, with thick eyebrows and a very peculiar projection of the lower part of the face, like the muzzle of a baboon. "And what became of the bust?" asked Holmes, after a careful study of this picture. "We had news of it just before you came. It had been found in the front garden of an empty house in Camden House Road. It was broken into fragments. I am going round now to see it. Will you come?" "Certainly. I must just take one look round." He examined the carpet and the window. "The fellow had either very long legs or was a most active man," said he. "With an area beneath, it was no mean feat to reach that window ledge and open that window. Getting back was comparatively simple. Are you coming with us to see the remains of your bust, Mr. Harker?" The disconsolate journalist had seated himself at the writing-table. "I must try and make something of it," said he, "though I have no doubt that the first editions of the evening papers are out already with full details. It's like my luck. You remember when the Stand fell at Doncaster? Well, I was the only journalist in the Stand, and my journal the only one that had no account of it, for I was too shaken to write it. And now I'll be too late with the murder done on my own doorstep." As we left the room, we heard his pen travelling shrilly over the foolscap. The spot where the fragments of the bust had been found was only a few hundred yards away. For the first time, our eyes rested upon the presentment of the great emperor, which seemed to raise such frantic and destructive hatred in the mind of the unknown. It lay scattered in splintered shards upon the grass. Holmes picked up several of them and examined them carefully. I was convinced, from his intent face and his purposeful manner, that at last he was upon a clue. "Well?" asked Lestrade. Holmes shrugged his shoulders. "We have a long way to go yet," said he. "And yet? Well, we have some suggestive facts to act upon. The possession of this trifling bust was worth more in the eyes of this strange criminal than a human life. That is one point. Then there is the singular fact that he did not break it in the house, or immediately outside the house, if to break it was his sole object. He was rattled and bustled by meeting this other fellow. He hardly knew what he was doing. Well, that's likely enough. But I wish to call your attention very particularly to the position of the house, in the garden of which the bust was destroyed." Lestrade looked about him. "It was an empty house, and so he knew that he would not be disturbed in the garden. Yes, but there is another empty house farther up the street, which he must have passed before he came to this one. Why did he not break it there, since it is evident that every yard that he carried it increased the risk of someone meeting him?" "I give it up," said Lestrade. Holmes pointed to the street lamp above our heads. "He could see what he was doing here, and he could not there. That was his reason." "By Jove, that's true," said the detective. "Now that I come to think of it, Dr. Barnicot's bust was broken not far from his red lamp. Well, Mr. Holmes, what are we to do with that fact?" "To remember it, to docket it. We may come on something later which will bear upon it. What steps do you propose to take now, Lestrade?" "The most practical way of getting at it, in my opinion, is to identify the dead man. There should be no difficulty about that. When we have found who he is and who his associates are, we should have a good start in learning what he was doing in Pitt Street last night, and who it was who met him and killed him on the doorstep of Mr. Horace Harker. Don't you think so?" "No doubt. And yet it is not quite the way in which I should approach the case." "What would you do, then?" "Oh, you must not let me influence you, anyway. I suggest that you go on your line and I on mine. We can compare notes afterwards, and each will supplement the other." "Very good," said Lestrade. "If you are going back to Pitt Street, you might see Mr. Horace Harker. Tell him for me that I have quite made up my mind, and that it is certain that a dangerous homicidal lunatic with Napoleonic delusions was in his house last night. It will be useful for his article." Lestrade stared. You don't seriously believe that? Holmes smiled. Don't I? Well, perhaps I don't. But I'm sure that it will interest Mr. Horace Harker and the subscribers of the Central Press Syndicate. Now, Watson, I think that we shall find that we have a long and rather complex day's work before us. I should be glad, Lestrade, if you could make it convenient to meet us at Baker Street at 6 o'clock this evening. Until then, I should like to keep this photograph found in the dead man's pocket. It is possible that I may have to ask your company and assistance upon a small expedition which will have to be undertaken tonight, if my chain of reasoning should prove to be correct. Until then, goodbye and good luck.